The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
You're listening to Believe You Me with Michael the Count Bisbing.
You know my name yet?
And Anthony Lionheart Smith.
We're off on safari. Well, we look like we're in the fields of Afghanistan. And it's a day off. I'm sweaty as hell. Finished my workout.
Welcome
to the show, everybody. Anthony Smith has returned.
Yeah. Don't look too bad either.
Eyes looking good. Bits and bobs are back.
Hell yeah. I'm excited.
Body's feeling good?
Yeah, I feel really good. My right leg's a little banged up just from throwing all the kicks, but that's pretty normal.
Yeah. Any word on when you will be back in the octagon?
No, they haven't said anything. I haven't got... Like, usually they ask, like, a date, like a time frame. It's been nothing. Which I'm okay with.
Yeah, no, for sure. To be fair, it hasn't even been, like, 2 weeks. Or maybe it's been 2 weeks. I don't know.
I mean, there's been times where I've gotten home Sunday, and they've called Monday.
My quickest one, I was weighing in. It was UFC 83. I was about to walk on the scale. And Chuck Liddell was supposed to fight in London, but he dropped out of the card for whatever reason. They were like, would you be... good turning around. I think it was 6 weeks. I'm fighting in London. I'm like, absolutely. Come on.
Who were you getting ready to fight?
Say again.
I
was fighting Charles McCarthy, and then I fought Jason Day, who fought on the same card and battered somebody. Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. Israel Adesanya going up against Sean Strickland this weekend. Lots of talking points, always, when it comes to Sean Strickland. Have you been keeping up to date with all the shenanigans and the press conference and stuff that happened earlier?
Yeah. I've been watching all the clips and, you know, the pertinent information. Sean Strickland's a maniac.
He is. Do you know what? He is a maniac, but he's not when he fights.
No, he's not. He's a really smart guy. If you can get him away from a camera and a microphone and he doesn't think that it's going to be recorded, he's actually really intelligent. And he, although he says some outlandish shit, if you break down the concept of what he's trying to say, a lot of it, I'm not saying all of it, but a lot of it makes a lot of sense.
Well, what might have not made sense was when he said, he said he'd been in Australia for an hour, and a fan came up to him and said, Izzy's going to F you up. So he punched him in the stomach. So Dana got asked about it at the Contender Series press conference afterwards. And he was like, yeah. And you know who told that story to everyone? Sean Strickland. So I think maybe he was calling bullshit on that one. But, I mean, Sean's doing a good job of hyping the fight, because the reality is, you know, he's not one of the biggest stars in the middleweight division, although his popularity is growing all the time because he does show up. He does put on a show. He's been in there with some of the best people. But I don't think there was massive anticipation and people calling for this fight. But he certainly made it very interesting at the press conference. He's talking mad shit, going deep on the Chinese champion stuff. What's your thoughts on everything that he's saying about Izzy?
Well, you're right. He's doing a good job of making people want to watch, because this isn't the one we wanted. We wanted the Dricus du Plessis fight. And we got kind of the second best fight. But honestly, he's turning it into something that I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see how he's going to do in there. As far as the stuff, the Chinese champions, like, he's gone a little far with it, but Izzy is the one who kind of attacked du Plessis about the whole African, not African thing. And then, you know, knowing that there's a video out there of him saying that he's Chinese. So, I mean, it's kind of fair game, I guess. Izzy put it out there. So, I mean, what's Sean supposed to do?
Well, Sean's accusing him of race baiting with the Dricus du Plessis thing. And then he's kind of doing the same thing with the Chinese champion stuff. It's just all fun and games. You can say whatever you want leading up to a fight. You know what I mean? As long as you don't go down the Dylan and Danis route. Did you see that? We'll stick with Izzy, but did you see that he's now getting sued?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be valid.
I don't think so either. I mean,
he's just reposting shit that was already out there publicly.
That's already out there. Mm-hmm. I guess a good lawyer would say that he's posting it for malicious reasons, right? But yeah. Even still, he didn't create those photos. Right. He didn't initially put them online. I don't think there's a law reposting videos.
Did you see that there was like an X-rated clip that was posted that people claimed it was her? And, you know, of course they're saying it's not her, but I didn't look close enough.
Yeah, well, it wasn't her. It's No, there's tattoos that don't exist on her.
Yeah.
Hold on, Brian.
I looked into this.
How long did you watch the video?
It's only a short clip.
Brian's like, I need to investigate this further. There's naked pretty ladies.
I gotta take a look.
It's like a nine-minute video.
You got to do your research.
That's what I'm saying.
For the believers, of course. Anyway, back to Strickland. Yeah, no, he is. He's making it personal. I'm not sure. I don't think he necessarily has a game plan with what he's doing. You know, like some people, they talk about trash talk being psychological warfare. You're trying to throw them off their game. You're trying to make them doubt themselves, which is true a lot of the times. I don't think he's doing any of that. I think he's just enjoying himself. And I watched an interview with DC, and it was really an honest take. He said, look, listen, you know, I wasn't supposed to be here. You know, I'm going to make the most. I'm paraphrasing big time, but it was something along the lines of, I know I wasn't supposed to be here. I'm here. If I win, I'm a superstar. If I lose, I go back to being a nobody, you know? So why not enjoy myself? And I agree 100%. You're in that position. You got the limelight on you. You want to make the absolute most out of it. So good for him. If I'm honest,
he seems very stress-free too. Like, I think in his media day, someone asked him, are you feeling the pressure? Are you, you know, and he seemed like, no, I don't feel pressure. I do this every single day. And essentially the same thing that he said, or that he said to DC, like, I wasn't supposed to be here anyways. So he's just going to go out and do what he can. And honestly, people are going to tell me I'm crazy. I think he's got the skills to keep it interesting. I don't know that he'll win, but it's not going to be a one-sided beating like I think a lot of people believe it's going to be.
I mean, we'll get into that in a minute. I was going to say something just then, but what did he say? Oh, forget it. I had a good point, something you said a second ago. I'm still jet-lagged like a mother effer, but in terms of the fight, I think when you – yeah, look, listen, Izzy knocked out Alex Pereira, and that was a stunning knockout, and he has had a few stoppages in the UFC. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that one-shot knockout power is the way that this is going to go down, because I don't think he's necessarily a knockout artist. Oh, sorry, that's what I was going to say. You're right. Sean's got no pressure on him. He's got no pressure. He knows he wasn't supposed to be here. He knows he's the underdog. He knows that probably everyone's writing him off. And I compare it to when I fought Rockhold the second time. Again, I took it on short notice. I'd already been beaten. No one gave me a chance. So it's like, you know what? I'm here. I've got no pressure. So therefore, I'm just going to go out there, show up, do my job, swing for the fences. Mm-hmm. And you never know. On the other side of this, I might just be champion of the world. And when you don't allow yourself to feel that pressure, and when it doesn't mess with the mind, and we talk about this all the time now, then you are going to perform way better.
Well, and he's so comfortable in fights because of the way that he trains. And he spars so much, and he's in the fire so much. He's always kind of fought without a lot of pressure. He just goes in and just does his thing. I never really was a big fan of Sean's fight style. So I can understand why maybe some people aren't, until I seen it in person. Until I was at the Apex, sitting right next to Heidi Dean, you know, watching Sean, it's fascinating to watch him. It's so, I don't know if you get that same feeling, but it's fascinating watching how he does a lot of things wrong, but he's so hard to hit, and he's got really good eyes, and he knows all of that stuff. You know what I mean? Like he knows that he's a unique problem when he's in there, and it's almost like he's walking around like he knows something that no one else does. And that's vibe. Well, and that's just kind of his vibe going through the fight week. It's like he knows the secret.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've trained with him extensively. I've said that many times, but I think coming off the back of that Abus Magomedov fight as well, that's going to do wonders for his confidence, because Magomedov, sure, he'd only had one win in the UFC at the time, but he's a very, very good fighter. I think he was undefeated as well, and he had a tough opening round. To be fair, Magomedov did gas a little bit, but it doesn't matter. He finished him. He finished him in the second round. And when you finish people, that reinforces your confidence so much more than skimming by a razor close decision. Putting people down, being the first person to take away that undefeated record, that helps massively in terms of confidence. Brian, we got a couple of little highlights of the presser. Should we play a couple and have a laugh? Because, you know, he is entertaining, he is funny, and he doesn't care. He will go there. Now, there's talk about fiddling with dogs' penises and all sorts, right? I don't know where that all started. I haven't seen the footage of that. But we're not talking about that one. But, you know, we're not going to go
hard,
there.
He went hard on that one on Rogan's.
Did he really?
Yeah. Like, he went really heavy on the whole touching, jerking off dogs on YouTube.
What did he say? Because I haven't seen this, but I've just heard a few people kind of refer to it.
Again, I don't want to piss off Izzy by putting out this weird thing, but he claims, I've never looked for it, but he claims there's a video out there of Adesanya touching a dog's dick. And so he just goes hard on it. He just goes in on him touching dogs' wieners. Rogan did not want to talk about it. He tried to steer away from it, and Sean brought it right back.
Izzy used to walk into the octagon and cock his leg and take a little piss.
You know what I mean?
Rogan didn't want to touch it.
No, well, he tried to steer the conversation away from the dog's penis, and then Sean brought that shit right back.
Oh, rightly so. Why not? When I look at this fight, you know, I think I haven't looked at the reaches, but I think Izzy's like 80, Sean's about 74. So, as always, Izzy has the big long reach advantage. He's very fast, he's a better striker, he's more technical, he's hard to take down. Brendan Allen on the show on Monday, I think it was Monday, he was saying, he's seen Sean wrestling, and he said he saw him wrestling with Magomed Ankalaev, and he said he was taking down Ankalaev pretty easily. And I was like, I'm not sure about that. And he's like, dude, I was there. And to be fair, it has been about 6-7 years since I've trained with Sean. Of course, we always get better. But do you think Strickland can out-wrestle Ankalaev?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do. Only because I've been in there with Ankalaev, and the best defense is a good offense. So Ankalaev is typically an offensive wrestler. Not a lot of people are going out there to actually shoot on him. Mm-hmm. Even with like a broken ankle, I was able to get pretty deep. And I felt like if I could have used my other leg, I could have, because I was able to get my hands together. I just couldn't, and I'm a fucking terrible wrestler. And I like was able to get my hands together, and I felt like if I could have stepped deep with my left foot, and I think I would have gotten the takedown. So it makes sense. Ankalaev's a great wrestler. You could tell he had heavy hips, and he was, you know, he knows what he's doing. But it's not shocking to me if you were to say Sean Strickland out wrestled him.
Yeah, I just can't see it happening.
Maybe not. I don't know if I could see him out wrestle him. Could he get a takedown in a cage against the fence? Probably. Is he going to be?
But Robert Whittaker is by far the best at putting them together, at blending the arts.
Oh, you're saying you can't see him taking down Izzy?
Yeah.
Unlikely.
Yeah.
He manages his range really well.
Manages his range well. He's got very strong hips. He's got those long, bloody legs. So against the fence, it's hard as hell. Dominic Cruz always uses the analogy. It's like trying to take down a table. You lift up one leg where you've got three other legs that it can land on. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good one. But so I think Izzy is going to control the range, because Sean fights behind his jab predominantly. Always starts with the jab. His jab isn't as fast, his reach isn't as long, and he's just not as technical. So I think he's going to have a really, really hard time. I think Sean's going to walk forward. And he said to DC, because DC said, how do you beat him? And he said, well, look at Bisping versus Anderson Silva. And of course, that is the game plan. That was my game plan. You crowd the kicker, you take away the reach advantage, you get in the face. But I think as Sean tries to progress, because Izzy's really good at fighting backwards. He's going to use that jab. He's going to use a lot of leg kicks. He's going to kick the shit out of those calves, keep bothering him like that, and then get him to obsess about the legs. And then as the fight progresses to round two, maybe three, start looking for those big, big power shots and probably get a finish. I think Sean will have some success. I think at some point he'll probably get frustrated and think, right, I've got to bite down on this mouthpiece and take a few to land a few. So I think we'll see a few flurries. But ultimately, that's kind of how I see the fight going.
I don't know that we see a finish. I think that I've always been impressed with Sean Strickland's vision. Like, he sees a lot of shots. And of course, he took the big shot from Pereira. And, you know, he did just wade into range and took the big shot. But I think Izzy's knockouts come because he is so accurate in his timing. I think it all comes from timing, accuracy, and getting people to step where he wants them to and running them into shit. The Robert Whittaker one stands out to me as one where he just kind of powered through a shot because he wasn't exactly in a good position to even land a big shot and was able to put Whittaker out. But I just think that Sean is so crafty most of the time. You know, he stood in front of a guy like Jared Cannonier for a lifetime and pressured him and pushed him back and was able to deal with the kicking game of Cannonier, who's done a great job of taking guys out, even Anderson Silva with leg kicks.
I was going to say, stopped Anderson Silva with a leg kick.
So I look at that fight as kind of evidence that Strickland can deal with good kickers. Now, I don't think that he's going to check them all, but I think he can fire. He just kind of lifts his leg up in this funky ass position. It doesn't do a lot of things correctly, but no. The way he does them works. So I guess it is correct if it works.
He bites on a lot of feints.
He does.
Strickland bites every time. Every time someone goes to throw or faints, he's biting, he's reacting, he's moving his hands. So he's fallen into traps of a sophisticated striker like Izzy. Izzy's talking about, you know, he would love to get a submission. If he gets a chance, he will choke Sean out. I would say, don't let your ego get the better of you there. Right. It was a long time ago when I trained with Sean, but even then, he's crafty on the ground. He's got some really, really slick sweeps.
Unless he's pretty much unconscious. If I was Izzy and it ends up on the ground, you just need to get as far away as possible. Mm. There's no reason to play that game.
Who would you go for? Who are you picking?
Well, I'm picking Adesanya, but I think it's going to be – I don't want to say it's going to be close, but I think Strickland's going to make it – he's going to make it interesting, and I don't see Izzy taking a lot of chances. I just don't. He can – he's tricked me before – into believing that he's going to go out there and do something way out of his wheelhouse and get into a brawl. And he's not going to do that. He's too smart. He's too technical. I don't think he's going to take a lot of chances because he doesn't have to. He can pick at Sean Strickland for 25 minutes from the outside and cruise to a decision if he chooses to.
I agree. But I just look at the Paulo Costa fight. Paulo Costa came into that one. He was undefeated. He just had a war with Yoel Romero, you know, full of confidence, power in his hands, because Sean doesn't really have that.
Well, I mean, then look at Yoel, his fight with Yoel. Neither one of those
Yoel
guys
froze.
Yeah, neither one of those guys wanted to get too far outside of their boxes, and they kind of just stared at each other, and Izzy picked at him from the outside. I see it going a lot like that one.
I think Sean's going to – I think he will rush him on a few occasions because he has to. That's the only way he's going to get in. I don't think he's got – and this isn't an insult. It's just his style. He hasn't got that kind of explosive footwork where he's going to fly in from a range and bam, 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 bam. He's just going to try and crowd him against the fence, corral him there, cut off the cage, back him up, and he'll have some strikes. He'll have some success, maybe land a few there. But Izzy's
he doesn't have that one-shot knockout power really either.
But every time somebody fights Izzy, this is what they're trying to do. It's always the same game plan. And Izzy generally, because of the reach, it's kind of like John Jones. He's always got, without the wrestling, of course, he's always got that reach advantage. He's always got the speed. He's always got the variety of shots. You know what I mean? And he's nasty as well. I do see a finish. I see a finish later on in the fight.
What do you think the game plan to beat Izzy is? Because we've seen, like you said, everyone kind of uses the same game plan. The only person that didn't is Alex Pereira. And I guess you could say he was. I mean, that's a 50-50 game that you're kind of playing out there, but it feels like it's almost a 100% chance of losing doing it the other way.
I think Sean's right. You do fight him the exact same way I was fighting Anderson, because them two are, whether or not Izzy, because remember when he first came, he wasn't happy about the comparisons with Anderson Silva. But they are very, very similar, apart from Anderson, I better jiu-jitsu on the ground. It is that kind of game plan. You got to take him away. You got to be in his face. You got to know that maybe you're going to eat a few, but you got to use a lot of feints of your own. Fast, fast hands, so good combinations. Mix it up. Have ridiculous cardio. You got to be able to push a pace that's going to tire your opponent out, you know. But
that's also a problem I see with Sean, too. We've never really seen him gasp, but it's because he doesn't get outside of his own comfortable tempo. He doesn't. The only time I've seen Sean tired was towards the end of the, I think it was the end of the Cannoneer fight, where he started throwing head kicks like crazy and starting to really let him fly and doing things that he doesn't typically do. He wrestled more in that fight. They fought against, you know, in the clinch a lot. I think that if he stays at his own pace and tempo, he could fight for an hour. But I think if he's forced to fight in a way that he's not super comfortable with, I think I don't know that he couldn't fight like you did against Anderson, because he doesn't, that's not the type of fighter that he is. You kind of were that style anyways. You just kind of upped the ante a little bit, but
that was always the way I fought most everyone, in fact.
Right. But he doesn't fight.
I turned into a wrestler when I fought Brian Stam, because I would have too. I'll never forget. I was telling this story the other day when I was training at Ruka, when I was training for Brian Stam, there was some guy in the gym, and I think Perillo had just taken him on the pads or something, because he has a few, like, you know, clients that he uses, sorry, that he trains. And this guy came over to me, and he just didn't know that I was Michael Bisping. You would think, didn't know it was me. Sorry, third person. You would think the accent would give it away, because somehow I was talking to Perillo, and he thought, the name Michael Bisping came. He goes, "Oh, I've heard talking to me. He's fighting Brian Stan." I said, Yeah. No, I know I am." He's like, "Man, how the hell does that guy beat Brian Stan? He just doesn't hit hard enough. Brian Stan's a maniac." I'm like, "Bro, you do realize I am Michael Bisping, don't you?" Perillo was laughing his fucking head off. The guy was, "Oh, I'm sorry. I said, "I'll tell you, I'll beat him. I'm going to wrestle the fuck out of him."
Right.
Exactly.
That's how I would have done it.
Yeah. He did hit me with a couple of hard ones. Right, so the big question is, so if there's no stoppage, we're not going to see this, but if there is a stoppage, I think Izzy's going to, you know, like he did Paulo Costa when he dry humped the crap out of him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think he's going to have something lined
up. He's
going to
have some
ready.
Fun for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of looking.
He said he's
going to
TikTok over his grave. He's going to TikTok, do a TikTok dance over his grave.
He is. Oh, and Sean said everything about Izzy's cringe, the fingernails, the pearl necklaces, the dancing, the TikToks, the anime love. Apparently to him, fondling dog's balls as well. Yeah. I know nothing of that, okay? But, you know, you want to cringe it? Okay, I'll give you a little TikTok dance on your grave.
I found those videos, by the way, if you wanted me to pull them.
Oh, go on then. Yeah, let's have a quick look. Some of them. Let's have a quick look, because I was going to move on and get Harrington on the show. But, yeah, go on.
What the fuck?
When you argue with a fool, those who are watching can't tell who's who.
Philosophy.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? You know what, man? The moment I post a video of me jerking off my fucking dog, they will put some credibility to that. Fucking puppy porn, man. I had to double check that shit just to make sure it was legit. And it was legit.
Wow. It seems to be annoying. Is
Sean? Yeah. Sean's voice cracks me up. Wow. Fucking Bobby Bourne. clear your fucking
motherfucker. He's like an American John Fury. He really is. Speaking of which, I think that press conference is going down live today, so there might be some fun shenanigans at that. I think Sean does a good job. I think he makes it interesting, but I think he will still be the champion. But you never know, and that's what makes this sport so fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. I thought you were moving on to the next subject.
I was giving you the last word, bro. Well, let's talk about chalk.com. That is chok.com. Look, listen, I'm not sure what age you are, but if you're in your 30s, your 40s, 50s, then you need to start giving that testosterone a boost, because it is the vital ingredient for being a man. You will have more energy. Your workouts will be better. You will be in better shape. You'll be in a better mood. You'll just generally be a better person. You'll be a better lover. That's for damn sure. And Chalk, they offer one of the absolute very best natural way of boosting that testosterone. Chalk has created a new natural testosterone booster that is taking the nutrition world by storm. And I prefer Chalk for several reasons, but mainly because it works. That's the big thing. It's a very, very good product. You go into stores, you look for all these replacements and supplements, they're filled with absolute nonsense, okay? Chalk uses full disclosure labeling. They tell you the exact amount of each ingredient and they never use proprietary blends. There is no label fluffing, no underdosing, and all ingredients are measured to exact clinical research. Chalk is the cleanest research-based testosterone booster available on the market today. And as I say, it works. So be the better you, be a better lover, get the most out of your workouts, have the energy, feel like a real goddamn man. No man alive should not take Chalk daily. So get yourself over to chalk.com. And along with the Chalk daily, check out their male vitality stack and the stack ultra. So chalk.com, chalq.com, that's the website. And if you want to get 35% off, use the code Bisping. So chalk.com, the code is Bisping, 35% off your entire order. That is chalk.com, use the code Bisping when you're there. Harrington. No. So I know we said we'd do it in a different order, Harrington, but did you see this plane? It had to pull over. It had to make a landing because somebody had the worst diarrhea ever known to man. Harrington, set the scene, please.
Yeah, so it wasn't only, like, it wasn't in their seat. According to the pilot who was radioing the air traffic control, it was throughout the whole plane. According to this pilot, this was a legitimate biohazard condition. Oh. Yeah, oh, look at that whole streak. They were about 2 hours into a flight from Atlanta to Barcelona. They had to turn around, and it ended up being an 8-hour delay for all the passengers. But the plane did eventually make it to Spain.
How's that
the
guy?
Same plane?
Well, speaking of that, Anthony, his wife just put out a statement on Twitter. So I'm going to play that for you guys.
Oh, perfect. Please.
So we just want to say thank you to our prayer warriors, because he's home now and he's resting and he's getting those electrolytes up, drinking Gatorade, eating fingering potatoes. Up. I will say that we've been seeing headlines saying he had diarrhea all the way through the plane. And we take issue with that, because you know what he didn't have all the way through the plane? Compassion from his fellow man. We had a big lunch at TGI Fridays and he was in the potty and the captain said, everybody put your seatbelts on. And so he got up and he went back to his seat to put a seatbelt on. Was he not supposed to?
Oh, this isn't real. Come on. I'm sorry.
Is he not real? He could have done it in first class because that's where we were sitting. But he went all the way to the back of the plane to use the bathroom there because he's a Christian and that was the right thing to do. But nobody's talking about that. One lady complained about it getting on her
All right, enough.
That's why you don't wear
open shoes. Hold on. Compassion? I'm sorry. Listen, I'm a
pretty Is that really his guy. Wife?
Well, they got them up, and he's going to need a lot of electrolytes after that. But I'm telling you, listen, you can all say whatever you want in the comment section. I'm a pretty easygoing guy, right? And if I see someone in need, I see someone having a bad day, I will stop. I will help. I will see if I can make their day better. You start shitting your pants, literally explosive diarrhea all over the plane. I'm sorry, bro. You ain't getting compassion from me. You're getting ordered to get right back in that toilet and get yourself together. And I will tell the bloody pilot to land the plane, because could you imagine the smell?
I cannot. I don't know that I couldn't laugh. I think I would die laughing the whole time. Like, it would be too funny. There's no way that I really, what are you supposed to do? Like, whether that's a real video or not, like, what are you supposed to do for someone that's going up and down the aisle shitting all over the place? Like, get out of the blast radius.
So the blast radius. Oh, God. Could you imagine? It's bad enough when someone, like, when
can you
people
imagine
fart,
the smell?
Oh, the smell. God. It's bad enough when people fart on planes, because there's always that certain aroma. Mm-hmm. They always have, you can tell aeroplane farts. But that smell, that would have been nuclear. That is ridiculous. So I guess the only logic, if he was in first class and went all the way back to the back of the plane, is because maybe someone was in the toilet at first class. And he's like,
I gotta go.
I am going to shit my pants. Ah, quick.
I do feel bad for him because that's embarrassing. And now it's world news. World news.
You're going to have a hard time living that one down.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to.
Well,
I can't live down, not get my teeth knocked out on national TV one time. I can't imagine if I shit all over a plane. You never.
Well, nobody knows. Down. Nobody knows who this guy is. His wife does not need to be.
We should get him on.
The wife does not need to be making videos, highlighting it, giving excuses. It's just like, it's a faceless crime. It's funny. It's embarrassing for sure. I mean, you feel for the guy all deep down, but don't just accept it. And let the world move on. Let the news cycle do its thing, and there will be some more bullshit to talk about.
Mike, golden rule number one. We need to get him on the show.
We'll reach out.
We got Brian. Can we try to find him?
Get on the search.
I'm going to start sending emails out today. I just wanted to clear it up that woman is a writer for the Stephen Colbert Show. She's not actually his wife.
Oh, right. Well, good job, Brian. Here's rule number one, though, and that he needs to obey. And I said this, I was talking to someone recently. Always, you got to evacuate before you get on a plane.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to go and take a dump. If you're getting on a long haul flight, because the last thing you want to be doing is sitting on a toilet where there's a queue of people outside, and you're sitting there and you're a bit constipated and you can't go, and you're trying to really give it some. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah, you don't want to be not to Barcelona. You got to shit first.
You gotta empty the vessel. You gotta evacuate before you get on a long plane.
Speaking of long flights, so I got my flight got canceled, and have I told you this story?
No, my flight
got canceled coming back from Singapore. Like I cleared customs, cleared security at the gate, ready to board. I got pushed back like an hour, then another hour, and then they canceled the whole flight. So I had to stay another day in Singapore. And ended up having to fly the next day to Tokyo, then Tokyo to Denver, Denver home. So I get into Tokyo, we find some food, and I'm like, I slept the whole first 7 hours from Singapore to Tokyo. So I was like, I need to sleep this second flight. Well, my manager, but she had another flight, like she wasn't on the same flight from Tokyo. So she had another flight. So she gave me two Valium that she had in her purse. And so I was like, all right.
On a long haul flight.
Definitely. So I had another 10 hours that I was just getting ready to board. I'm like, oh, I'm going to find a drink. I'll just have a drink. So I go to this little place, and there's this, you know, little Japanese lady. And I say, hey, can I get a vodka soda? And she said, you want two? It's like, yeah. You know what? Oh, yeah, I'll have two.
They always do that in airports. Anytime can I get a beer? Do you want a shot to go with it? Yes.
So she hit me with, would you like two? And I said, yeah, doubles. And I said, huh? She said, two doubles. I was like, yeah, for sure. Why not?
Yeah.
And then she goes, how long your flight? I was like, 10 hours. And she put her finger up and said, I got you. And when I drank that I don't know if there was any soda. It was a 16-ounce glass of vodka and ice, and I smashed it. Well, then, you know how you do it on planes. You got to take the Valium. So then I take that.
Of course.
Drink the other one on the way to the gate. I was drunk before I got to my gate and realized I left my backpack in the bathroom.
Oh.
I was boarding, and I was like, what? Oh, shit. So I had to run. It was a whole shit show. I had to run across the airport just hoping that it was still there. And then hoping I could get back before they left me.
The airport buzz is essential, though.
Yeah, you have to have it.
You got to get a little buzz. Like this,
I was nervous that I had taken, like, I drank way too much vodka. But I had taken the Valium before that. So I was like, I got to get to my seat before this kicks in.
Before you shit your pants everywhere.
Yeah. At least next you had thing, no next thing I knew, I woke up in Denver. It was like my last memory was getting on the plane.
Well, that's perfect, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And that's why you do it, is medicinal purposes. Mm-hmm. You are medicating yourself to knock yourself out for the entirety of the flight. All right, Harrington, jump on the show, please. And I hope this time you are fully dressed. Reason being, ladies and gentlemen, is that when he joined the show before we started, he was, you can tell the man's been working out. He's proud of himself. You're doing a great job, Harrington. You know, he was shirtless.
Yeah. Well, I'm down to 240 now. So, you know, you gotta show that off. It's a big milestone. 240?
Hey, good for you, let's man. Go.
Am I about to lose $100 to Harrington?
I think you are.
We have a bet. He's going to be 300 pounds before he's 200 pounds.
Oh, oh my God. What was your highest, Harrington?
270, like 273.
Oh, shit. Really, man? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, good for you, man. But no, because that's starting to get.
It's a little heavy.
That's fucking obese, man. Yeah.
Outrageous.
Outrageously obese. Mike Harrington.
The trend was going my way. I'm just saying.
It was definitely going your way. What have you got for us, Harrington? What's the big MMA story right now? Obviously, it's 293 this weekend in Sydney. Is there anything outside of that, though?
I mean, just a couple of big bookings. The UFC is scheduling out their UFC is scheduling out their fall the fall fight nights. So you got two friends of the show. Bobby Green is going to be taking on Grant Dawson, and Sadiq Youssef versus Edson Barboza the following week.
Yeah, yeah. All right, very good, very good. So that's a no then. There's no big stories. great vibes. Looking forward to it. Fantastic. Good bookings. Mm-hmm. What do you want? We're not going to break them down. Bobby Green's going to keep it on the feet. He's going to use that boxing. Grant Dawson's probably going to try it out, wrestle him, which is what he does every time, and he's a hell of a wrestler. Hard to stop. What's going on in your world, Anthony? Time celebrity later, right?
Yeah, I'm going to the Kansas City Chiefs, the season opener for the NFL. So it's the Kansas City Chiefs versus the Detroit Lions. I have a buddy here in Omaha, good friend of mine, who's a big Lions fan, and I'm a big Chiefs fan. So him and I are headed to the game here in a little while, and I got a little thing I'm doing at the tailgate. So it's going to be a good time. Have you ever heard of these people on YouTube? I don't know who they are, but they make these like remixes on YouTube. They're like an hour or 2 hours long. They call them the Big Booty Remixes. I listen to them all the time at like tailgates. No. And I don't know why they call them Big Booty Remixes. There's like 100 of them, but it's a mashup of different songs from different genres, different times. I mean, like you can get a Elvis song mixed with a 2 Chainz song. I mean, it's really, really cool shit the way they mash up the way these DJs do it. And they're DJing the entire tailgate in Kansas City today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that.
Excited. Have some fun, have some drinks, make a few dollars. Good for you. We didn't talk about the co-main event yet. Taito Avarsa taking on Alexander Volkov. Taito Avarsa, I love this guy. Everyone's a fan of him. He's so much fun every time he shows up, you know, and he shows up one way only. It's just to brawl, you know, to swing, to get stuck in, to have a war. He's not the most, with respect, and I think he'd say himself, not the most technical martial artist, but he's definitely a fighter of the highest degree. You know, I mean, the man loves to get in there, knocked out Derek Lewis, Augusto Sakai, Greg Hardy, Harry Hunsucker, Stefan Struve on a 5-fight win streak before he met Cyril Gane and Sergey Pavlovich. You know, they were bad knockouts for him. But he's fighting Alexander Volkov, a man that doesn't have that kind of power, but has the height, has the reach, has the karate. How do you see that one?
He's got a pretty dope back piece tattoo too. You seen it?
Yeah. What is that?
It's like a
mask. Thing on Crash Bandicoot when you're invincible. Do you know what I mean? You know that thing that comes Crash Bandicoot and you're invincible. It looks like that.
Yeah. He had something else there before and he had it covered up with whatever he's got on there now. It looks dope, but it's shocking because he's so big and tall that the thing wouldn't fit on my body because it's a massive tattoo.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's huge.
Look at that. I mean, that's a lot of work. And it does look like that mask from Crash Bandicoot. You gotta get that up. You gotta bring that up for a side by side, Brian.
But as far as the fight goes, I think you made a good point that he's not the one punch lights out kind of guy. I think that he has the type of power that a guy like Taito Avarsa can kind of, if he can move his head and take him off the corners of his forehead and come over the top of some of those long rangey shots. In his last couple of fights, he's talked a lot in this pre-fight stuff about wanting to get stronger and put on weight and be you know, have some more muscle. And because he's feeling like it's so odd, but he feels like he's not a large heavyweight, which.
Well, he's 6 foot seven.
Yeah, he's huge. He's a massive dude.
And he's not a skinny guy.
No, he's not really, but he feels like he's not a very big heavyweight. And so maybe that's he's in some of these grappling and clinch exchanges, and he feels like because of his length and leverage that he's getting kind of manhandled a little bit. But I see Ty getting on the inside and you know, kind of historically, Volkov's had a tough time.
It's not a million miles away. Not a million miles away.
It's not that far off. I think he's going to have a tough time with Ty on the inside. And listen, we can say, you can look at the end result of the Cyril Gon fight and say, yeah, Cyril, you knocked him out bad and made him look like shit at the end. But he had Cyril pretty hurt in that fight more than one time.
He dropped him in the second round.
Yeah. I mean, we were both there in Paris. Like they weren't that far apart for a while. I mean, it was competitive, and he had Cyril hurt a couple times. So I don't think that Volkov is the striker that Cyril is. So if he can get inside on Cyril Gon as much movement and speed as he has, he can damn sure get on the inside on Volkov.
I think we'll see a lot of similar strategy that Izzy's going to use against Sean. You can make some parallels in that kind of fight. Of course, Tuivasa is by far the harder hitter without question, but Volkov is going to use those front kicks to the stomach, those teeps. Yeah. They're not teeps, they're front snap kicks. A teep is a push kick to push someone away from you. A front snap kick to the stomach can take your wind out. And that's what he did against Rozenstruik. He uses them all the time. I think he's going to try and soften up that already soft midsection of Ty Tuivasa. He's going to move a lot. He's going to use that reach advantage. I think it could be really hard for Ty to find the mark. But with Ty, once he gets in on the inside, he is not afraid to just let it go and swing for the fences. And I think being in Sydney, because that's his spot, that's where he's from, he's going to have a massive amount of support. And having that support, that can, you know, obviously spike your adrenaline. But having that adrenaline spiked, that's what's going to allow him to think, fuck this, just go forward, eat one or two and just swing and get on the inside. You know, if you don't have that kind of power, having that fan support, having that adrenaline spike, that can be detrimental to your performance. Mm-hmm. But when you truly can knock people out with your hands, that can be a very, very powerful weapon. So I probably see Ty some point over the three rounds. I see him eating a lot of shots, a lot of jabs, straight shots, a lot of push kicks, front kicks, but ultimately finding the mark at some point in the fight.
Yeah, I agree. I think at some point, whether it's early or late, I think it just depends on Volkov and how cognizant he is of the crashes. I do think he'll end up finding a big shot at some point in time, especially being in Sydney. I think that's the game changer for me. It's just none of those guys from there are going to be easy to beat.
No, not at all. Did you see that Manel Copps making the most of it? Copps on the fight card, he was supposed to be. Try and find this video. Manel Copp and Israel Adesanya.
He looked right up at Izzy and said, fuck you too, sit the fuck down.
They are going at each other like crazy because obviously Manel Copp was supposed to fight Kai Kara France. They're in the same team. Mm-hmm. He's been replaced now with Felipe Dos Santos, but he's making the most out of this platform that he has right now. Manel Copp's really good, man. I think he was a rising champ. He was a champ over maybe ONE FC, or was it Rising? I think
it was somewhere in Asia.
One of those promotions.
Yeah.
Came to the UFC. I think he might have dropped his first one, to Pantoja. He's now a champion, but he's done some big, big things. But he's still flying under the radar, but he's got really, really good skills. And now with this kind of spotlight on him, for whatever reason you want to say, he's certainly making the most of it. Do we have that little interaction, Brian? I'm sorry, buddy. I know I'm throwing you on the spot.
So just clarify, he was the Risen Bantamweight champ, dropped down to flyweight when it came to the UFC.
I was going to say, stay there, Harrington. He jumps off so quick. Here we go.
He threw a water at him.
Hey, I know he did.
Shut the fuck up, motherfucker. What you want? What you want? What you want to? What you want? All right, shut the fuck mouth. Sit down. What the fuck you are? Stand up, motherfucker. Stand up, motherfucker.
Yeah.
What a gangster. Izzy was like shocked. He was, he probably was just blown away. He had the balls to say anything to him.
He's like, you little bastard. Mm-hmm. I'm 6 foot. What is Izzy? 6'4", 6'5"?
Yeah, something like that.
I'm the longtime middleweight king.
I think Izzy said, he said something like, I'll give you fucking brain damage. What are you
The best part, if you watch closely, Tai Tuivasa, a heavyweight, is sitting in between the two of them like, guys, guys, I could beat up both of you. Knock it off.
He did actually say at one point, I'm here as well. You know, yeah, make it-
I'm here.
All the kids are arguing. Do you like a nice steak?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Anthony,
I love a nice steak.
Do you try and follow a pretty decent diet for the most part?
Yeah, for the most part. If I want to go off and just crave something that's shitty, I will. But for the most part, I eat pretty clean.
Yeah, no, same here. I try. Yesterday, I caved in. I got back from the Contender Series. I was exhausted. Jet lag was kicking in because I was straight to the Contender. Then, I just felt a bit shitty, a bit sick. I might have had a few vodkas at the airport on the way back as well. Sore throat. I'm like, you know what? Bollocks. I'm ordering some DoorDash. You know, I had some shitty food. Felt even worse about myself then. You know what I mean? But a new study has come out that says eating too much red meat is going to give you cancer. Harrington set the scene for his pleas. I call bullshit on this. I'm no journalist, sorry, a scientist. I don't know if you know that. I'm not a scientist.
Really?
But I say bullshit to this. Go ahead.
So it was a study done from 1990 to 2019 that showed it was like a three decades of data that shows that the rate of cancer in people under 50 has skyrocketed up about 80% since 1990. And this study's findings said that the biggest culprit is the Western diet. They said specifically a lot of red meat, salt, and alcohol has led to a prevalence of cancer. For people under 50.
Bullshit. People have been eating meat, salt, and alcohol for the history of humanity.
Thank you, Brian, because that's I read that headline I was just about to say. So go on, Anthony.
No, you're good. I read this headline to my wife, and her words literally were, you're fucked. That's all of your favorite things.
I'd say here. No, but to Brian's points, ever since human beings have roamed the earth, sure, we've been hunter-gatherers. Mm-hmm. Hunter, let's focus on that part. We've been eating red meat. Ever since the discovery of alcohol, which goes back thousands and thousands of years, and we've been using salts to maintain the longevity of meat, to preserve them as well. So that's utter, utter bullshit.
There was a time
if you've ever been to the Dominican or Costa Rica or something, and you get away from the resorts and you go like out into like the country or like into the actual communities, that's all you see is red meat being preserved with salt. That's how they hang their meat. That's how they keep it. I call bullshit.
I would say this, when they're talking about the Western diet, they're talking about highly processed foods, which is just full of crap, full of bullshit.
Lots of sugar.
Sugars galore. That's one of the worst ever. Yeah. All the genetically modified crap, all the chemicals in it. That's the real issue. But what I want to ask you, Harrington, is who did that study? Because I guarantee, because you know, there's this whole movement to lower the amount of red meat, to lower farming, to save the climate and all the rest of it. That has definitely got an agenda, because Brian, you worded it perfectly. Since the dawn of humanity, alcohol, red meat and salt,
we wouldn't exist without those three things.
I wouldn't.
I certainly wouldn't.
The people wouldn't have survived. Like, alcohol saved humanity when water was bad all over the place. Like, they'd make beer so they could drink the water. Because the alcohol, because when you make when you ferment the water, and like the barley in the water and shit, it kills all the bacteria that would have otherwise given you some sort of terrible internal disease. Shit, sorry, guys.
Essentially the same thing that I've been saying every time someone says, are you drinking a beer? Like, yeah, there's water and beer. So dad, having water.
I've said it a million times. My dad always says, you know, because I'll say it again. When you look at my dad, I just want to put some lotion on his face. Dad, love you. Like, he's so wrinkly because he just worships the sun. And I'm like, God, Dad, drink some water, because he never drinks water. And like, when he comes to the stage, I'll give him a glass of water. He's like, I'm all right. I'm like, Dad, just take a glass of water to bed. Have a
Everybody
bit of hydration.
Drink a glass
he's
of
like, water. He's like, number one ingredient in whiskey is water. Number one ingredient in Coke, which he drinks a lot of water. Or water. Harrington, who did the study?
The British Medical Journal of Oncology.
Oh, for fucking ever. It's got to be perfect then. If it came from the British Medical Journal, I take back everything I said. Brian, edit that bit out. Brian, we were talking before, and you had a bit of a conspiracy theory about this before we went live.
Well, as you know, I have a tinfoil hat permanently embedded underneath my hair. That's why I grow it so long.
Yes, yes.
And there's a thing. People can look into this themselves. I'm not trying to sell anybody on it, but the World Economic Forum put out a thing called Agenda 30. I believe. Yeah. Agenda 2030. And that's like the whole smart cities, 15-minute cities. You'll own nothing. You'll eat the bugs and you'll like it. Like, that's where all that comes from. And those are direct quotes from people in charge of the world. So I'm not just making shit up.
Hold on. What are direct quotes from people in charge of the world?
You will own nothing and you will be happy. You will eat the bugs and you will like it. That's Klaus Schwab and Justin Trudeau. Two of my
Justin Trudeau
most
Canada's
hated people. Castro's
idiotic
kid.
Prime
Castro's
Minister.
Kid, right?
Castro's
kid. You know
what
we're talking about? Yeah. Fidel Castro's kid.
That Justin Trudeau, he's gone off the deep end, hasn't he?
Yeah.
It's a genetic.
Yeah. Genetic disposition. He's
hold on a minute, because you had the thing about his, what was that conspiracy?
Because he's Castro's kid.
That's Fidel Castro's son.
We should start calling him Justin Castro.
I do. Sick.
Oh, geez, Louise. Geez, Louise.
Here comes the cease and desist for the Believe in Me podcast from Justin Castro.
You can't say anything in Canada these days. Let me see. So, Gilbert Burns says that he would love to welcome Dustin Poirier to the welterweight division. Is, first and foremost, I want to ask, is this credible, Harrington? Because is Poirier legit talking about going up to welterweight? Have you heard anything, Anthony?
I haven't, but he's always been open to it. It's always just had to be, he's open to it for big fights. He's always kind of has mentioned that time and time again about, well, I would do this at 170. I would take this fight at 170, but I think it would have to be for the right matchup. Cause everyone talks about how large of a 55er Dustin Poirier is. Somewhere out there, Brian, I don't know if it's quickly accessible, but there's a video or like a picture from his last fight week at weigh-ins. I was actually in backstage when they took this picture. It was Wonderboy. Maybe it was like a bunch of welterweights. And then Dustin Poirier. And he looks like a child standing in the group of those welterweights. He's not that – I'm sure he has a tough cut to 55 because he is real thick. But he's not a – it's not like he's going to compete with the top welterweights in the world. He's just not big enough.
He's just not big enough. And the first thing that I would say is that – fought at 145. Anytime someone fights at 145, I wouldn't, you know, if you can make 145, then you're not suited to fighting at welterweight. Of course he wants to fight some big fights at welterweight, and rightly so, just like McGregor wants to, just like people want to step up a few weight classes. I'm sure he could get up to 180 comfortably. I'm sure he could compete with some people and have a really good fight. Skill for skill, size for size, you know what I mean? He could probably compete. Could he be a champion? Could he have a fun fight with Gilbert Burns? Probably. He's 5'9".
He used to be a 55er. Like, Gilbert Burns is not he's not huge.
He's 5'9", so
who is
the biggest guys?
Burns?
Dustin Poirier.
Oh, I see. I feel like he was shorter than that.
5'9", 72-inch reach. Yeah. How do you feel about everyone cutting weight, Anthony? Because I just like that. Now we're on this. Everyone just needs to, I think, step up a little bit. Like, if you look at McGregor versus Poirier, the first fight when he knocked him out, not taking away from McGregor's performance, but that's because he was cutting weight. If you look at Alex Pereira against Israel Adesanya the second time, I would suggest, and again, not taking away from Izzy, it's because you're doing these massive, massive weight cuts, and not only are you detracting from your abilities when it comes fight night, but you're also risking getting knocked out unconscious because you can't take a punch as well. If everyone just moved up, we would have a way better, more entertaining sport because people would take a better shot. They would land better shots. They would fire at a better pace. Mm-hmm. And it ultimately would be safer.
It saved my career, moving up a weight class.
It saved my career,
maybe my life, as far as like the longevity of my health. So I'm all about it, but it took me years before I got to a point where I was comfortable enough to do it, where I got to the point where I was going to retire or move up. So it was really my only option. So I wish people would just move up. I think you would see much better fights across the board. You'd see much happier fighters. The media would like it because they'd get better interviews because guys wouldn't be miserable. Yeah. I think that you would have more like guys with better conditioning. They'd be able to take a better shot, which means better fights. I think across the board in all ways, the fights would be better.
100%.
And the fighters would be happier.
Harrington, give us a non-MMA story, please. What do we have? It's a bit of a slow news week in MMA. Of course, we've got the big pay-per-view and I'm very much looking forward to that. And you know, there's some very, very intriguing fights on there. You know, Manel Cops on there.
Monday, we'll have a lot.
Say again.
So Monday, we'll have a lot.
Monday, we're going to have a lot to digest. Justin Taffer's on there versus Austin Lane. It's probably going to end in a knockout.
That's a rematch, right? That was the rematch from the eye poke, right?
29 seconds, I think it ended, the first one. So they're rebooking that, which is smart. Carlos Ahlberg's back in action against Daun Jung. That'll be fun. Yeah. Pedro's back. The pleasure man.
The guy who Pedro's fighting, they call him the Pleasure Man, and that's his nickname. And they tried to ask about it during the press conference, and he's like, "Oh, he'll find out." And Tyson's like, "What? What are you talking about, dude? Like,
do not try and pleasure me."
Real name?
Anton Turkal.
I don't know that guy.
yeah, he came off the Contender Series. I think he had a fight recently. Hold on, let's have a win. I think you might have had one win off the Contender Series. Anyway, Hamilton, what have we got?
Non-MMA. All right.
Go on.
Turns out we're all superheroes because we survived the one chip challenge, unlike a Massachusetts teenager who this story, I'm sure you guys have been tagged in this a million times since Monday. A teenager.
I haven't been tagged once.
For real?
I got hundreds.
Tagged a bunch?
Hundreds. Jeez.
Jesus, you're tagged in tweets that I'm tagged.
Yeah, you're tagged in the same stuff that I'm tagged in.
You just don't check your mentions.
Jeez, I check them like once a day.
Mike only checks his verified tab.
Ooh. Oh, that's probably what it is. Nice. I don't know. No, let's have a look. I'll walk you through it right now. I got boom, boom. No, it's all. It's on all. I don't know. Anyway, continue.
So a Worcester teen took part in the one chip challenge. Apparently he got it from one of his classmates. He went to the nurse because his stomach was feeling like really bad after he did it. His mom came and picked him up from school. He said he was feeling, he was feeling better to the point where he was even like getting ready to go to basketball tryouts after school. And around 4:30, his brother came and like got his mom and was like, "Yo, he's passed out." They rushed him to the hospital, and they weren't able to resuscitate him. So,
and what did they say the cause of death was?
They haven't announced an official cause of death yet. I'm assuming they're going to do an autopsy, but the like I said, this is being reported on left and right that this person died from the one chip challenge because that was that's what caused him pain. And that was that.
Brian just put in the chat here, it could cause difficulty with breathing. I think it could cause issues with the esophagus. Dr. Lauren Rice of Tufts Medical Center said, difficulty with breathing. I still can't believe Rebecca just started munching more of them.
I don't know Rebecca very well, but it made me look at her differently.
Hey, Beck. Anthony Smith doesn't think the same of you anymore. He looks at you differently.
Oh, not in a negative way.
No, just I know. Like, in a gangster way.
Yeah, she's
come here.
She's tougher than we are.
She is. Oh, here she comes. She loves a little bit of bad time. Come here, babe. Just real quick. She's like, listen, a kid died. How old was the kid? Because I'm like, because Lucas loves a bit of one chip challenge stuff.
Hello.
14.
Hello.
Hello.
14. I'm like, do not be doing that because we have a couple in the cupboard that we
should throw them away.
Yeah,
I should definitely throw them away.
Well, we paid good money for them.
Well, you're not going to do it again, are you?
Well, I'll do anything for a view.
I feel like I would never do it again. But I feel it like Rebecca bad. Probably just eats them like with dip and stuff.
Yeah, but it wasn't bad. I'm just being honest. Like, I wasn't being brave.
I just told Mike, I just look at you differently now. Like before, I was like, oh, she's such a sweet, nice lady. Like, I don't know. She's got a
weird side to her.
She's got a weird side.
But yeah, I will throw it away because we're not going to do it again. It's just
No. I will find some idiot that comes over. I'll get him drunk.
That's why I kept them at the mine.
Yeah.
Just to give them another. Now if they die, then is that like a murder charge?
Attempted murder.
How did he die?
Especially now that we've spoke about it on the podcast.
I know.
What happened to him?
I'll edit this out.
Yeah. No, he just, I don't know. He ate the chip and he died shortly after, was having stomach issues and he was pronounced dead later.
I have to admit my stomach was burning about an hour later.
Anyway. Thank you, sweetheart. Yes. I just thought I'd call you in on the one chip challenge because Anthony was giving you some props.
Oh, thank you, Anthony.
Yeah, man. No, that's a real shame. That's a real shame out there, isn't it? But to be fair, there could be a lot of other reasons. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised no one's jumped in and said, it was the vaccine.
I think we talked about this. I need to unfollow TMZ on Instagram because every day there's like death announcements of people around my age. And it's like, no. And like you said in the comments, everybody, it's the vaccine. Every single word. It's all the vaccine.
And I'm sick of it on the news as well. Because listen, at first I kind of followed, you know, what was being told by the scientists and whatnot. Now I stick it up your ass. But all over the news every day now, they're going on about your boosters. They're going on about the mask mandates are coming back in certain states. No, or they're at least not. They're talking about
it.
I'm not doing it either.
I am not doing it.
I've gone full the other way.
Yeah,
me too. I was compliant. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right. I'm like, now go fuck yourself.
Not a chance.
Completely.
You're gonna have to call the police before I put that fucking mask on.
But I tell you what, I did see on TMZ an interview with Jake Paul, and Jake Paul talking about how Diaz has turned down the $10 million offer for an MMA fight because. You saw what I did to him in boxing, and he's worried that I'll do the same thing to him in mixed martial arts and take away this mythology that he's this gangster guy, that he's this legendary fighter. He says, so the $10 million isn't worth essentially the damage that it'll do to his reputation. Again, paraphrasing, but that was the general gist of it. If Diaz has turned that down, I would be very curious as to why.
That seems hard to believe. I would fight Francis Ngannou and Tyson Fury at the same time for $10 million.
Yeah.
And convince myself.
Like, stops the fight.
Yeah, and convince myself that I could win.
100%. And that's the disillusion that fighters have. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'll just sleep Francis first, and I'll just get Tyson tired, and I'll probably shoot a takedown on him. And
I'll just ankle pick him.
Yeah.
I'll ankle pick him. He plants
both of them at the same time.
He's predictable. I'll ankle pick him. I'll choke him out. It's really that easy. So Jake Paul, he's out there talking about Nate Diaz. I think he's full of shit. What he should be doing, and we always talk about this, is trying to fight some boxers or trying to fight Tommy Fury. But that press conference, Tyson Fury and Francis Ngannou, that I believe that is happening as we speak. Mm-hmm. Might be going down right now.
Yeah, I have a quote from it. Tyson Fury on facing Francis Ngannou in MMA, he says he's not a good jiu-jitsu man, not a good wrestler. He's a striker, and I'm a better striker than him. In those little gloves, I'd smash him to bits in seconds.
Well, he's not exactly wrong when he says he's not a good jiu-jitsu guy and he's not a good wrestler and he is a striker, because that's true. But we saw against Cyril Garn, he does have the ability to take somebody down like Cyril that has got submissions, etc. So I would just say that if it was in a mixed martial arts contest, Francis would be shooting from the other side of the octagon, probably get it more than likely.
Being a bad jiu-jitsu guy and a bad wrestler is better than having zero wrestling and zero jiu-jitsu.
Being non-existent in either. Yeah.
That's kind of...
People don't understand. People don't realize,
Francis doesn't even get on the ground. Well, Tyson isn't on the ground. Like, he's not even in the game.
All right, let's talk about Fitbod really quick, which is the app for your phone, which is going to replace the need for a personal trainer. Listen, Fitbod's smart workout app can create custom dynamic exercise programs based on your goals, experience, and equipment. And that's a big one, right? We don't all have the same equipment. Maybe you're on the road, you're living in a hotel room, you're in a park, you can't afford a gym membership, whatever the case may be. They have it specified to whatever you've got. You just put it in there, and they will create a workout for you. Their algorithm uses data and analytics to scientifically build your best next workout and maximize results. You can see your muscle usage, recovery, achievements, and workout streaks right there in the app. And you are in control with workouts designed just for you, so you get exactly what you need. And there is all the 1,400 high-definition videos to show you what the workouts are, or the exercises are, should I say. So, you know, you make sure you get in the good form. And basically with the videos, you do have a personal trainer. And the best news is for less than the cost of one session with a personal trainer, you can get a full year of personalized workouts with Fitbod. Fit exercise into your schedule, because the best time of the day is whenever you are free. By the way, Fitbod works on iOS and Android devices. So right now, try it out. Get 25% off your subscription, or you can try the app out for free when you go to fitbod.me/believe. That is 25% off, or try the app for free when you go to fitbod.me/believe. What have we got, Harrington? I'm just looking here. Natan Levy was beating someone up in the gym that was talking a bit of shit. Alexander Volkanovski and Valentina Shevchenko have been announced as the cutter athletes for UFC 5. Well, fair play to them. Well done for that. Mm-hmm. Nina Agdel suing Dylan Danis. Yeah. Alan Belcher taking on Roy Nelson in the bare knuckle MMA world.
That's a good one. Chris Camozzi's fighting for the bare knuckle title.
I'll tell you who else is fighting this weekend as well. It's the big Brazilian, the two big Brazilians, Junior dos Santos and Fabrizio Verdum.
Yeah, in the is that Mass Girls? Yeah, the Game Bread FC. That's bare knuckle MMA, right?
I think it's bare knuckle MMA.
That's cool.
Yeah. Same thing as the Roy Nelson Alan Belcher fight.
Oh, yeah. Really? That's cool that Belcher's coming back and getting some big fights. Yeah. Fabrizio Verdum. Oh, he's Alan Belcher's taking all the Jews. No, I remember. I think it was last year. Yeah, it was last year. I was staying at the Red Rock in Vegas.
Yeah.
I came out the elevator and I was walking just down the whatever. And someone says hi to me. I'm like, hey, how you doing? I thought, he's a big juiced up guy. And then I stopped. I had to do a double take. I'm like, shit, it's Alan Belcher. And like, I'm glad I caught myself, because we had a little bit of tension back in the day when we fought, just competitive stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing personal. I'm like, oh, shit, Alan, how you doing, man? Good to see you. So we had a little chat. But dude, he's big, man.
He is huge. He is. You know what? Whatever. If they're all doing it over there, whatever. But
yeah, exactly. Good for them.
Yeah, good for them.
I couldn't care less.
Yeah, he looks healthy.
You know, I mean, if that's what they want to do and they're all taking them, then fair play, you know. I always say, if you're not, as long as you're not competing in professional sports, or you're supposed to not be taking it, because I guarantee they're all taking it. Yeah, they're all taking it. Maybe they're on a level playing field. I don't know. Not much to talk about today, sadly. Didn't have any guests on today. We had you missed Sugar Sean O'Malley on Monday, sadly.
Oh, yeah, I know.
But we do have some questions at the ready, and it is your favorite part of the show, Anthony. So if you have a question, ladies and gentlemen, send them in to the BYM pod or bympod@gmail.com.
And if you're listening on Spotify, wherever you happen to find podcasts, make sure to subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. It really helps out on those platforms. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to the channel and you hit that notification bell to find out whenever a new video drops. And if you want to catch over 400 episodes you can't find anywhere else, completely ad-free and totally uncensored, head to gasdigital.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get yourself a 7-day free trial. Check out over 20 great shows on the
All right. So we got a first question here from a lady, Kathy Webb.
Hi, this is Kathleen from Chester in the UK. Zombie's retirement last week got me wondering, are some walkout songs so iconic and so related to certain fighters that they kind of retire with the fighter, either by an unspoken rule between fighters, or would the UFC step in and say, nope, sorry, you've got to use another song, you can't have that one? I was also wondering how you guys would feel if someone wanted to use Return of the Mac or Song 2 as a walkout song. Would you be flattered or annoyed? And one last thing, Bisping, UK fans over French fans.
Yeah, of course. Of course, Kathleen. You know, and thank you very much for the question. She said, and one last thing, Bisping, UK fans over French fans. Because I said the French fans were the best in the world. Because moment in time, that was the, I mean, obviously when I'd be fighting, I don't know about the crowd, but those fans in France, they were something else. But you're right, Kathleen. You're right, Kathleen. And thank you very much for the question. Interesting one. How would you feel? I mean, I haven't heard Song 2 by Blur used by anybody else, but I think I'd be flattered. I'd be very, very flattered if someone else was using it. They'd probably just use it because they think it's a good song. I don't think they'd be paying a homage. But I don't think there's any set rule where the UFC say, I mean, I've never heard of it.
It depends. I think it depends on the person, the song, how long you've been around, what have you done.
Scale of the fighter.
So someone wanted to use Return of the Mac maybe 2 or 3 months ago. I don't remember. I wish I could remember who it was, though. He was retiring, though. He wanted to use it as his last song. So when he gave them that as his song, they called and asked if it was okay.
And what did you say?
So of course. Of course.
So that's nice. So they called you and said, would you mind if someone else? And you're like, yeah, I don't own the song.
I don't own the song. I don't own the song. I would hope, you know, and I've changed it twice in the last 10 years and they've been really upset with it. Like, but I've had to promise to go back and use it again. But really, because I caused a stink about it, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's a rule about it, but I think Return of the Mac is very much attached to me in the UFC. I think that Kid Rock Cowboy is very attached to Donald Cerrone.
Yeah, there you go. You know,
your song is attached to you. Chris Weidman,
Anderson Silva, he'd come out to what was it? DMX. Yeah. So would Chuck Liddell. They were two different songs, all right.
Yeah.
Because you do the opening bars, whatever it is, maybe it's a drum roll or whatever it is, it kind of gets the crowd hyped. Like, here he is. Because it all adds to the anticipation and the thrill and the excitement. You know what I mean?
Jose Aldo always came out to the same song, I think. Rihanna.
And was it Kanye West or Jay-Z?
It was Run the City. I think
Kanye West, I think.
Kanye, yeah.
I can't do it. I don't know the words, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, there's you know, there's guys that have their songs that are attached to them for sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Kathleen. Good question.
That's a great question.
French fans are not as good as the UK. Brian.
All right. So next question here is from Kiki. These are going to be a couple of family-oriented questions.
Let's go, Kiki.
Kiki.
Hey, guys. This is Kiki with another video question. First, Anthony, I did not know that you were interested in criminal justice. That's actually what I got my bachelor's in here in Illinois. So small world, great field, never had a boring class. My question for you guys is, how did you guys propose to your current spouses? I am proposing to my partner of 7 years in September in Chicago, which is also where we will be getting married. And I'm curious, how did you guys propose to Rebecca and Michaela? And also another small fact, Anthony, my name is Makila, which rhymes with tequila, but I usually get called Michaela because of the way it looks. So thank you guys. Have a great rest of the week. Appreciate the podcast. Have a good day. Bye.
Makiki. There we go. Anthony, give us the rundown. When you popped the question,
man, I was so broke and poor. It wasn't as nearly as cool as I wish wish it was now. I took her out to a nice restaurant with another couple of ours. At the time, we only had one kid, so we had one baby. So my oldest, who's about to be 12, she was probably just over a year old, and we went to a nice restaurant. And it was just me and Michaela and then the other couple. But I had a bunch of her friends and her family and her mom brought the baby. And then I went and used the bathroom and they were all like in the bar area of the restaurant where we couldn't see them. And then I sent the baby up to Michaela with a package. And then it just said, open me. And it was like the ring was in the thing. And then I came and got down on the knee and
So all the family were in on it. They all knew. So that's why
right,
they were there
to right. And then afterwards, special. And then afterwards, we just celebrated.
Ah, surprise. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. And what was her reaction? Did she burst into tears?
She did. She just started crying. And yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. Well, as you say, you look at Rebecca a little differently. Yeah, she's not like that. She's not one to burst into tears. You know what I mean?
That's one of the handful of times I've ever seen Michaela cry. Maybe four times over 13 years, 14 years together.
I think Rebecca was frightened. She was surprised.
She's
like, shit. I was leaving for the Ultimate Fighter. It was Christmas 2005. So I knew I was leaving like the 2nd of January or something. I was going to be gone 8 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it was. So yeah, you know, I mean, we'd been together at that point, 6 years. Mm-hmm. So yeah, popped the question, did the whole thing, but we were broke as well. So yeah. I bought the ring, Paul Kelly, that used to fight in the UFC. I bought the ring off his dad that dabbled in a little bit of jewelry, mm-hmm. you know, and she loves it because it's all antique. It's fucking news to me. I had no idea. I was like, I need to buy a ring. And he came in with a bunch of nice little rings. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I don't know where they came from. Let's be honest. Might have been stolen goods. I don't think they were, by the way, but
we're all well.
With those Scousers, you never know. They get you a cheap Rolex or whatever, you know. So, yeah, did the whole thing, got down on one knee. I think she was absolutely terrified. She didn't cry or anything like that. And then we didn't get married for what? I think another 9 years.
We were engaged for like six.
Yeah.
Yeah, six
Can't
or seven
rush
years.
These things.
Yeah, I had to be sure.
Can't make hasty decisions when it's the rest of your life. Granted, you've already had children with them. How many kids did you have with her?
Four. Yeah, we got four.
Yeah. You can't rush marriage, but you
we had three. We only had one when I proposed. By the time we got married, we had three. We've only had one child together since we've been married.
How long into the relationship before she fell pregnant with the first child?
Like 2 or 3 months. It's fast.
Yeah. Same here.
It was fast. Oh, I was like, God, I guess we're doing this forever.
Yeah. No, it was really quick. And then we didn't learn after the first one because then mm-hmm. she got pregnant again. You know, I was like,
We had a baby like every 2 years for, you know, 6 years.
I remember when, because I was not setting the world on fire. I was always in trouble with the law for getting into fights, getting arrested. I had no job or the jobs I had, I couldn't hold down. I was a mess. I was all over the place. I was very immature. Mm-hmm. But she was a very, very great lady. Comes from a fantastic family. You know what I mean? Very, very respectable people. And they, I don't know. I mean, they've always been so supportive, but maybe they were thinking, maybe this is just a phase. You know what I mean?
Maybe it's just a phase.
I know. And then when she was pregnant, she's like, oh, I can't wait to tell my parents. I'm like, I do not feel the same way. And she says, oh, I'm so excited. I can't wait to tell them. I'm like, oh, my God. So they came around the house, and which she bought and she was paying for because I'm a bloody jobless, bloody broke asshole. And I'm like so embarrassed. I'm like, and she says, oh, I've got something to tell you. And they're like, okay, what is it? And she goes, I'm pregnant. And he just went, oh, shit. That was his response, and I don't blame him.
Michaela's dad found out she was pregnant before I'd ever even met him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The first time I met him, she was like 6 months pregnant.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Oh, what a shit show. I met her mom like right away, but
yeah.
But her mom was I don't know. She's a recovering alcoholic, and she's had a rough life, and you know, she's fantastic now. She's been sober for forever, but she's been through some shit when she was younger, so like I always felt like she kind of gets me. I'm kind of a fuck up. Like, she's been there before, like she understands me a little bit better, but come on, you know you like me. I was terrified.
What else we got,
though?
But yeah,
all right, so that leads right into the next question. This one is Nicholas from Finland.
What's up, BYN crew? It's Nicholas from Finland here, and it's probably our last sunny day here until the last year, so I decided I want to send in a question today. My question is this. I know you, Anthony, and you, Michael, both became fathers at a fairly young age. I, too, have a friend or two who are about to become fathers at a fairly young age. I just wonder, what went through your head when you became a father, or when you heard you were gonna be a father? Were you nervous? Were you excited? Were you wishing you had used a condom? What sort of advice would you give to young men who are about to become fathers for the first time? That's it. Keep up the podcast. I really love it. And fuck off, Harrington.
Yeah, that was a fuck off, not a fuck you.
Fuck you, it was fuck off.
Wow, those Finland people, they are offensive. Mm-hmm.
How old were you?
Advice. How old were you?
I would have been 22 when she got pregnant.
Yeah, I think I was like 20, 21, 21. Yeah. I was 21, so similar age.
Yeah.
Advice. Well, I mean, how did we feel? For me, I mean, it was kind of, I was shocked.
I was terrified.
I wasn't terrified. I was shocked. I wish, I mean, it's great that we had children so young, because now, mm-hmm. like Callum's 22, you know, and I'm still young enough. We work out together. We have a good relationship. Same with Lucas, you know. But I was very immature and still very young when they were kids. I was still a child myself, and I've got mm-hmm. the responsibility of raising two kids, but obviously you've got to put them first. But in some ways, because now Lucas is 13 and I'm 44, I feel like I would have done it so much differently if I was in my 30s, shall we say, as mm-hmm. opposed to being 21 and still out there, still figuring my life out, still figuring out who the hell I am, you know. I feel I would have been a much, much different father. Probably a better father, maybe. I don't know. I kick myself a lot. My wife disagrees with me, but I would have done things so much differently if she got pregnant when I was older.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know. I think I was in a very similar position. I was having a hard time taking care of myself, Mike. I was struggling. And then it was like, now I got this other person, you know, this baby, this helpless child that... So that part of it was nerve wracking for me. Like, how am I going to take care of all of us? You know, like I'm fucking struggling myself here, but it elevated everything. I don't think I wouldn't have been nearly as successful without her. You know, I've always told Araya, my oldest, that she's the one who saved my life. You know, like I love all my children exactly the same, but I've always credited her with saving my life because I needed someone to need me. I needed someone to need me to get my shit together and figure out a way. And it wasn't just about me failing and the only person it would have hurt was me. Michaela could have went off and done her own thing. And, you know, she's got a degree and could get a fantastic job on her own right. She didn't need me then. But the baby did, you know? And so, yeah, as far as advice goes, it kind of is, you're not going to, any advice that you would give anybody. And I found this with friends that have had kids later on. Once you feel that type of love, it's just instincts at that point. Like you just have to react. And
that's exactly what I was going to say.
You'll figure it out. There's nothing I'm going to say right now, or Mike's going to say, or anybody that has kids is going to say that's going to make any fucking sense to you, because you don't know until you're like right there and you figure it out. There's only a couple reasons babies cry. And you'll have to just flip through the Rolodex and figure it out.
Well, I think when Harrington was, Alex was pregnant with Aura, I think he asked Rebecca, and Rebecca gave the correct answer. And it's just so obvious. All you got to do is love him.
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is love him. Everything else takes care of it. I mean, Jesus right. Christ, everyone overcomplicates it. You got to go to class these days, and you got to go to prenatal class, and you got to learn about this, and you got to learn about that. Fucking hell, people have been having babies in the jungle, in caves, since the dawn of time, okay? Right. And they figured it out. And right. They raise children. So just love them.
Do it doesn't best. Matter how you breathe. That baby's coming. It doesn't matter about what breathing technique you use. It's coming out.
Let me ask you this. How quickly, though, after the arrival? Abigail, did you say?
The oldest?
Yeah.
Araya,
sorry, pardon me. How soon after the arrival of her did you get your shit together? Because for me, it still took me a little while. As I say, I was 21. I was reckless. I was still making a lot of mistakes. And I guess for me, it was only when and we had two at that point, and I was still just being an idiot.
It took me a little bit.
It was only when I went to prison and I was like, whoa, what the flip am I doing? Do you know what I mean? And I was like, well, I got to get my shit together. Well, no, we didn't have two kids. Rebecca was pregnant with Callum. Rebecca was pregnant with Callum. I was still going out drinking and getting into fights, hanging out with the boys, you know what I mean? And it was when that judge gave me that sentence, that's when I was like, shit, right, okay. All right, enough is enough. She's fucking pregnant in the back of the courtroom. Yeah. I got a little slap on the wrist in 28 crazy, days. Mike.
I had the exact same circumstance. Michaela was pregnant. She was 8 months pregnant with our first, with Araya. And I was, when we met, I was on probation, but I was still partying my ass off. And I got a probation violation, and per the terms of my probation, I had to do 90 days for the probation violation. So I go to court and I have my pregnant girlfriend in the back of the courtroom, 8 months pregnant. And like the judge essentially was like, why shouldn't I put you in jail right now? And I was like, I haven't broken any laws since I've been on probation. I know I got the violation. I didn't get the classes done and all the other bullshit, but I didn't break any laws and I haven't been arrested. Like I've been out of jail. And I got a and my girlfriend's pregnant in the back. And it turned out that the judge at the time was like from my hometown, and he gave me a shot and just was like,
yeah,
I didn't live in the same county anymore. I'd already lived in Omaha, so I wasn't in that same county. So we didn't have to mess with me anyways. He let me off probation and said, I don't want to see you again. And I left. That was the last time I got in trouble.
That was the last time. Okay, good. Because for me, I'd go to the courthouse. I'd get in a little fight. You know what I mean? I'd have a fight uptown. There was always a lot of trouble in the town that I grew up. Nothing crazy. We're just talking little bar fights. You know what I mean? Punch this dickhead, whatever. It all kicked off for a minute, whatever. Police show up, end up in cuffs, whatever. Not proud of it. But nothing. We're not talking like, you know, serious crime.
Yeah, like I wasn't robbing people. It was
I wasn't robbing people. No selling drugs, nothing like that. I was just immature and drunk. You know, immature and drunk.
It was always alcohol. Yeah, always alcohol involved.
Always. Or every single time. I've never been arrested sober. I mean, I have been sober, but for something I did when I was drunk. But every time I go there, you get a little slap on the wrist, you get a little bit of a fine, you have to pay £60 court costs, whatever. Mm-hmm. I had to do some points. I had community service. I had to go to the graveyard and pick up weeds and pick up litter, and that was very demoralizing and embarrassing, but still you just think it's a game. Still think it's a game in my mind.
Right.
And it was only when the judge sentenced me to 28 days and I was like, shit, this is the path that I'm going down. Right. And it was that was the big wake-up call for me. It should have been when she was pregnant, but it was when I ended up in there. I was like, wow, okay. So next time it's going to be 6 months or a year or two years, and opportunities are going to dwindle. People aren't going to want to give you a job. You know what I mean? So that was right then and there. And I always say, I thank that judge because he taught me a very valuable lesson.
Well, and I had done a bunch of jail time, like a bunch of different sentences. I did like 180 days, a couple of 90s, a bunch of 30s, and it didn't matter. But when I thought I was going to be like do those 90 days and miss the birth of my child was when I was like, oh my God. All right, dumb fuck. Like, and it still took me a little bit it's not like a switch that just turns off. Like, you got to ease your way into civility a little bit.
That's a great way of putting it. You know what I mean? Because that old dog, he's still in there.
It's in there.
You know what I mean?
So it takes a little bit.
Close enough, he's going to bite you.
Yeah, it comes out. That monster comes out every once in a while, and you got to learn how to push it down. But it was in there.
It's still in there. Yeah. It's still in there. And I think that's a good place to end the show. Mm-hmm. Hope you enjoyed us talking about our little parenting backgrounds there. But Anthony, thank you. Enjoy the football game later.
Yeah. See you guys at Thursday Night Football.
We both had pregnant wives at the back of the courthouse. We're both MMA fighters. We're wearing matching colors.
Keep that monster inside.
Keep it inside. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the fights. We'll be back on Monday.